There is one member from the military here who says, are you combat ready now? You know Meymir. Meymir likes to raise all these issues.
Not so bad in the
Can we welcome everybody that is in the house? Be it media, be it visitors. And I see the chief whip also from the DA. And I see all our members here and the whip from the ANC. We are going to deal with quite an important issue, which I'm quite clear that it doesn't have precedent in Parliament. It's going to be for the first time that we are going to be engaging into this particular issue. And I want us to be very cool about it, and we could either learn or lose out of it, all of us. But it's an important issue within the parliamentary precinct. Because I, as chair of parliament, when I had come across some information, I had then requested that information to be provided to us as members. And then after that, the member really complied with that particular development and he gave us the information. But he then asked us to put the information onto the parliamentary process so that we could be able to talk about it. So we are at that level now. We've got different opinions about the processes. We've got different opinions about what we think about the issue itself. But what I would really call for is that we need to be quite sober about it and engage into it quite correctly so that we could learn out of it. And I do hope that we have given different parties an opportunity to reflect on the issue. We have provided the information to different parties to look into it. So we are at that one. So how we are going to really go on in the issue itself? I would give you an opportunity, sir, to present the issue again to all of us as members of parliament. And I would allow people to respond to the issue itself. And then we would get to summary at a later stage. But we would give you the opportunity to present your views. And I would allow members to respond to your views, as I said. Are you comfortable with that?
Yes.
You are. I know you have always got a good smile with me. So you can go on. Members, are you okay? You have got the information in front of you. If you don't, let me just make sure that every member is covered, has got this information. We do have the Secretary of Defense amongst us also here, because this is the accounting officer. We do have different legal representatives around the table. We do also have a parliamentary legal representative. Mr. Banara is around here. And usually we do have the media here. It's quite interested in the issue itself. So it is an important issue within our own constitutional democracy. But how do we handle issues and how do we handle information within the parliamentary precincts? As I'm saying, that precedent has never been. And we are going to look into is that what do we do around this particular issue. I'll give it over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I will, since the document has been made available to members, I will try to summarize as quickly as possible. Let me begin by saying I had a press. I held a press conference on the 2nd of August, where I disclosed what I called a crisis in the NCACC, and I exposed a number of dodgy arms deals. I set out that information in a document which has been made available to all members of this committee, which was entitled Arming Dictators All Over the World. I'll try and summarize its contents, Chair, as quickly as possible. I said that the NCACC was in crisis, and I made two important points. I said that the arms deals had been authorized at non-quorate meetings of the NCACC. And I also said that the NCACC was a serial defaulter in respect of submitting both quarterly and annual reports, which I believe to be a breach of Section 23 of the Act. Chair, the combination of improper authorization and a complete lack of transparency, I believe, led to several dodgy deals being authorized by the NCACC, again, I believe, in contravention of Section 15 of the Act, which, as members know, require the committee to consider whether there is any risk that exporting conventional arms from South Africa will contribute to to escalating regional conflicts, contribute to the violation of human rights, contribute to internal repression, and contribute to the fundamental to the violation of fundamental freedoms. Chair, then let me go through the deals. I dealt in the document with three kinds of deals. I dealt in the document with deals that had been authorized by the NCACC, deals that were pending authorization by the NCACC, and the case of authorization to exhibit military support equipment in a country of concern. I exposed the fact that we were selling glide bombs that could be used to deliver nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons to Libya. I exposed the fact that we were selling multiple grenade launchers to Libya. I exposed the fact that we were selling multiple grenade launchers to Syria. And I exposed the fact that we were selling thousands of multiple grenade launchers and assault rifles to Venezuela. I also exposed the fact that we were attempting to sell thousands of Aviator G-suits to Iran, thousands of sniper rifles to Syria, and millions of rounds of ammunition to Zimbabwe. I also exposed the fact that a company based in this country had received authorization to exhibit and demonstrate radar warning receivers for submarines in North Korea. Members will know that the newly appointed chairperson of the NCACC, Mr. Jeff Radebe, responded to these allegations at a press conference on the 6th of August at the Union Buildings. Now, I want to point out that he did not deny the allegations and, in fact, confirmed many of those allegations. And let me deal with the most important points here. He conceded that arms deals were, in fact, authorized at non-quorate meetings. He refers in his response to a special mechanism which would be invoked under exceptional circumstances, where decisions would be taken by a chairperson or a deputy chairperson of the NCACC and then ratified at a later date by a full quorate meeting of the NCACC. Now, Chair, practically, that would mean, I would suggest, that somewhere after September 2008, arms deals were authorized by the by the special mechanism, by a chairperson or deputy chairperson of the committee, and then probably ratified by the new NCACC somewhere in August 2009. Now, practically, Chair, if the NCACC, if the newly NCACC disagreed with the authorization of arms deals by the special mechanism, what are we going to do? Are we going to go back to Muammar Gaddafi and say, well, we've now in fact decided that we shouldn't be exporting glide bombs to Libya, we want them back? Or should we be going to Venezuela and saying to Hugo Chavez, well, we've now decided that we shouldn't in fact be exporting assault rifles to Venezuela and we want them back? I mean, he's likely to say, well, you can't have them back because they've already been handed over to the FARC guerrillas in Colombia. So that's the first point. The second point is the dodgy deals themselves. The minister did not deny any of the allegations. In fact, he conceded that we were planning to export thousands of Aviator G-suits to Iran. He conceded that we did demonstrate radar warning receivers in North Korea. And exhibiting radar warning receivers in North Korea is very serious, Chair, because surely, if one is exhibiting military support equipment, then the intention must be to sell that equipment, and that is a very serious issue. More importantly, the chair of the NCACC, Jeff Radebe, conceded that, in fact, the committee were considering authorizing thousands of sniper rifles to Syria and millions of rounds of ammunition to Zimbabwe. Those decisions have yet to be taken, but permits for the export of those systems are before the NCACC. Finally, the chairperson took issue with my claim that the NCACC is not transparent and is a serial defaulter in respect of submitting both quarterly and annual reports. The fact is the 2005 and 2006 annual reports, I believe, were received by Parliament, but what the Minister failed to say is that they were in fact marked, I believe, confidential and secret. And one of the key objectives of this committee, of the NCACC, is to ensure that there is greater transparency in respect of conventional arms sales. But the Minister neglected to say that reports had been handed over to committee but were marked secret. Also, Chair, the Act, as you know, requires that these reports be made public. And as far as I'm aware, they've never been made public.
Which clause are you citing that?
That is, I believe, Section 23 of the Act. We can have a look at it afterwards.
But,
I do. If you give me a moment. Chair, I read Section 23C of the Act. At the end of the first quarter of each year, present to committee are required to present to Parliament and release to the public an annual report on all conventional arms exports concluded during the preceding calendar year. And I would argue that the NCACC are in breach of that. Chair? Yes.
But we need to also read the full, because you see, we talked about disclosure and non-disclosure. And I thought that you would start with 23A to look at how that process is beginning to work out. Let's not be selective about the process. Let's get into the whole process, how that is work. Oh. And I'm not sure that you are quoting the correct act. I've never even ventured to say that you have put information outside that I don't know. I've never even contested your point.
Sure.
Well, I'm just saying that let's get into the facts. I'll definitely respond to you at the correct time. But I'm just saying that if you go through the act, that's going through in whole stuff so that you all understand what we're talking about.
Sure. Okay. Chair, I stand by my point that I believe the NCACC is not transparent and is in breach of that section and is not complying with the act in respect of producing both quarterly and annual reports. But as you say, we will debate that during the course of the session.
Yes.
Let me then summarize, Chair. I mean, I believe that South Africa, in respect of conventional arms sales, is behaving more like a rogue state than a democracy. And I believe this is a very serious issue, and I'm very glad that we'll have the opportunity to debate that in the session. But most importantly, Chair, the question is, what do we do from here? And as I said at our last meeting, I believe that it's imperative that the NCACC appear before this committee urgently, and that in respect of each of these deals, they tell us what date, when the arms deal was concluded, who concluded that arms deal, what systems were sold, and most importantly, we need to have sight of all the documents on which the NCACC based its decisions. Those are the documents produced by the scrutiny committee. The NCACC are obliged to take into account, for example, whether, as I mentioned, whether conventional arms would contribute to internal repression.
Okay.
And we would want to see how the scrutiny committee has assessed those criteria, because I cannot understand how it is, given those criteria, that we have exported weapons to countries like Syria, Libya, and are thinking about exporting ammunition to Zimbabwe. More than that, Chair, we also need the Auditor General to appear before the committee. I mean, as you're well aware and as members are aware, the Auditor General audits the NCACC every year, and I believe that the Auditor General's office also needs to appear at the very same session of this committee. This, Chair, is, I believe, a very, very serious situation. I mean, we are sitting in a situation where the NCACC could, even this week, authorize the sale of thousands of sniper rifles to Syria or millions of rounds to Zimbabwe. And I believe that we have the duty to do everything that we can to stop those deals. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Thank you. Member Remir, you definitely know that it's the first time that the committee is beginning to go into this particular discussion. And I had said to you last week that we had prepared to say that we are going to engage the NCACC. So we've been trying to put together a parliamentary program of inviting the NCACC, so we're fairly aware. We're supposed to have the NCACC on the 19th. Now, they can't make it on the 19th. They've asked us to, because the minister won't be here, but he wants to come and address us himself. That is what is going to happen in relation to the NCACC. It remains invited. But most of the issues that you are raising are related to the work that is done by the NCACC. That we acknowledge, that I acknowledge as a chair, that is work that is related to it, you see. But also, the issue that has to arise, you see, is because we have to handle this issue quite in different ways.
Comrade Chair, is it possible for you to speak up?
Yes, sir.
We want all want to hear you, what you are saying. But if you are going to talk to yourself, we won't follow you.
Yes.
Please.
No, sir. I was just trying to say...
Don't try.
Okay. I'll give you an opportunity to get into the issue itself.
No, I just want to...
No, it's fine, Tatu Mlangeni. Can you just handle yourself? Yeah, just cool down, Tatu Mlangeni. I'll give over to the member. As I said, Tatu Mlangeni... The NCACC, you know that we do expect it to come to Parliament. It is supposed to have come on the 19th, as paid by invitation from us. But the minister have apologized to say that he can't be here on the 19th. Can we take up a different date? So we are looking into that. We are engaging them. So the NCACC will come and answer to all the things and allegations that are being said about them. I mean, as the chair of Taupa, I go. I'll give over to members to hear what they want to say. Can I give it over to you? Yes, I take over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. For the benefit of those who don't know me, I'm Honorable Stella Tembisandabeni. Firstly, I would like to appreciate and welcome the briefing by the Honorable Member. That side. But I've got few clarities that I would request from the Honorable Member before I engage with the content of the document that he has presented. I would like to know, where did the member obtain this critical information? Then I will have follow-ups after that question.
Okay. Yeah.
Chair, could I just ask to take one question at a time?
Yeah, good morning, members. Honorable Chairperson, I appreciate the laid down of the information. But, Honorable Chairperson and the members, I believe that we are not enemies, firstly. We are not enemies. The laid down here, it appears that we are enemies. But we are not enemies. Well, we are brothers in the new dispensation, unlike in the past. Now, it's nothing wrong to find or obtain any information somewhere else. I would hope that whatever has been obtained outside of this committee, it should come before it spread all over. I have read about this in several newspapers. I was surprised because this matter has never been laid down to this committee. We are members of the Portfolio Committee of Parliament. We are all honorable members of one government, not enemies at all. If I find something outside which is important or critical, I should bring it to the committee so that we look at it. And, of course, call those who are responsible to come to tell us why is this has not been done? Why this has not been happened? Not go out on the newspapers and spread all information on the newspapers throughout the country and throughout the world. We are not enemies. One honorable members of South African government, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee of Defense. So we ought to bring all the information here so that we discuss and see how to dish out of the committee. This is a very insensitive matter. It is important, of course. It is, at the same time, sensitive for our country. Our country has to be defended by people who are honest enough. Not to go about spreading news all over the world, all over the country and all over the world. I just want to comment this, Honorable Chair, that we are not at all enemies. We are the members of government. We here, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
I am Letapam Patel of PhD. Thanks, Chair. I suggest that, first and foremost, we face the facts as they are, raw as they are. The Honorable Member has alluded that what he has are facts, and he went on to say some of his allegations were confirmed by the Minister, if I'm not mistaken. So it is my suggestion that even before we comment, even before we forward our party's opinion, we address the facts. And we address them one at a time. And we see if there are some rules which were broken, some legislations which were breached, and by so doing, really, I think we'll be going somewhere. We should take emotions out of this discussion we address. For that matter, even you, Comrade Chair, you have alluded that he has not enumerated or read the legislation in its fullness. So now, let us just confine ourselves to the facts, and later on, really, we'll come up with our party's positions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm not going to respond to the whole issue at this moment, but there's one thing I want to emphasize, and that is I want to respond to the Honorable Member on a question, where did the Honorable Member receive this information? Now, it's a prerogative of the Member whether he wants to say where he got the information or not. But, Chairperson, I'm strongly opposed that any Member has to say where he or she get information. I link it to the principle of privilege in Parliament. If we truly believe in democracy, if we truly believe in opposition politics, then no member can be forced to declare where he or she got certain information. Sometimes, you know, faxes are very interesting instruments. There are certain documents that's popping out of a fax machine with no names on, but it's got very important information on it. So I just want to make sure that this committee as well respect the principle of privilege of members of Parliament. That's very important to me. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Well, I just wanted to say while we're discussing facts, I must also point out that at this stage we don't know what is factual and what is not factual. I mean, for myself, the Honorable Mayor, the Honorable Member keeps on saying even the Minister has conceded to certain facts. The Minister is not here to answer for himself. When I listened to this very debate last week, Saturday, I mean, last week, was it this week? Friday, yes. the minister kept on saying, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. Today the minister is not here, and we are told he has conceded to certain things. To be honest, I can't trust the honorable member to speak for the minister. I would rather have the minister answer for himself. So I'm just saying that the issue of facts is still disputable, because the only person who can tell us what is factual and what is not factual is the minister. And I'm saying the honorable member cannot speak for the minister. I would rather have the minister speak for himself. The second point is about the source. While we respect the fact that some of the sources might not be disclosed, but I think we should also acknowledge that we could also allow ourselves to be tossed around. I mean, somebody can fax some information and say these are allegations, this is so and so. And if you can't confirm how reliable the source is, you'll end up, I mean, we could damage the image of this country, the image of this parliament, just because somebody who is mischievous has decided to do so. We could be misled any direction. So I'm just saying that look at it from all angles, not just from one angle. We could be deceived, we could be played a fool of, we could be done all kinds of things and waste parliament's money, resources, arguing about something that doesn't have basis, just because somebody mischievous has decided to play that game. So I'm just saying, I think this must be, we must take a very balanced approach towards that. We'll argue the content, but I'm just worried that at this stage, what is said to be factual is not yet verified. Thanks.
Can I respond? Chair, there were many comments, but really only one question, and let me respond to that, and that was Stella's question. I've said on numerous occasions that I will not reveal the sources of my information. Those who are responsible are welcome to get out the thumb screws, but I will not release and will not reveal the sources of my information. And I believe, Chair, that it should be the NCACC in the dock, not me. So that's my response to the first question. Just to make one comment, the minister on SAFM did say that I lied, but that was because he did not have the facts. The facts were not on his side, and he was on the back foot. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not well informed on these matters. I've not been well. I've been in bed and I've not been able to follow up anything or read anything. But matters which have been raised here are of great importance to me, and I believe to many other people. I'm not sure what our legislation says with regard to selling arms to other countries. Whether if we, for example, sell arms to, say, Botswana, we are contravening a United Nations resolution or something which forbids. I'm not sure about that. The honorable member over there from the DA has mentioned a number of countries, Syria. I don't know what our legislation says about selling or not selling arms to Syria. Libya, North Korea, and many others which have been mentioned. What does our legislation say? Are these countries under a sanction by the United Nations that members of the United Nations should not sell arms to them? I'm not sure about that. But If I were a member of DA, bringing up these matters here, and my country appears to be involved, I would have done the following. Approach my minister. I say, Minister, I've got this information. What is the position? Are we not contravening any act, any law, by doing this and that? I want a reply from you, Minister. If you don't, I'll go public. That is how I would have approached it. If you did that, then you are correct. But every country, South Africa was at war with the ANC, the Liberation Movement. And at some stage, South Africa was being boycotted by a number of countries. But some countries kept on supplying South Africa with the things with which they were not supposed to have supplied them. Similarly with UDI in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia. Smith, South Africa kept on, in spite of the United Nations resolutions, South Africa kept on supplying Zimbabwe with oil, with petrol, fuel, etc., etc. General Groenewald would know that. Now, I'm saying, Community Chair, that we've got a right to sell what we have produced, what we have manufactured, to other countries, if no law prohibits us from doing that. It's our right. Otherwise, why are we manufacturing things? All countries are manufacturing things to sell to other countries. Is there anything wrong with that? These are the problems I'm having in my mind, Community Chair, that unless we are prohibited from selling certain things to certain countries, then we should be free to sell them and not make a huge hullabaloo about it. Thank you.
Let me just get, I'll come back to you, because I want you to keep to the focus now. I have said that we are going to go into the NCACC. We're going to have a hearing where we are going to get some of the facts that have been provided. Members do feel handicapped. I want to clarify you, Mr. Groenewald, that when you call a parliamentary process, I mean a parliamentary hearing, after the facts have been presented to us, we aren't on muzzling the opposition. We are really giving them an opportunity to engage into the issue. As you could hear from different members, it was more said in the paper than the committee being engaged. And it's the first time that the committee is now taking the issue upon itself. And so at no stage... I'll share it with you. Yeah. Okay. No, look, you are an invitee in this meeting.
Another dodgy deal.
Okay, no, I know you're looking for them all over me.
I'm finding them, Chair.
No, you know you'll be tired of that girl. But you see, Mr. Groenewald, in the question that goes with obtaining, I want us to use the memory of Parliament. Because you see, it's important, that's why these questions are arising. Mr. Mayor, in the memory of Parliament, there was an investigation by the JSEI, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. They, in their report, they have an issue that has been a matter of concern to us. That report, Mr. Mayor, I always want to make sure that our members follow what is happening. It was given to Parliament on the 26th February 2008, if Mr. would recall, Chief Whip. Within that particular report, there was a concern raised under the topic threat emanating from information peddlers used by the DSO in the production of the MOU document. Now, I'm talking about information. They say their modus operandi includes the use of illegal, intrusive techniques of getting information or intelligence. Now, I'm raising it because you are saying that if somebody facts in information, now that's where I think the member's question arises at. How certain are we as this committee that we are dealing with information that is conclusively or classified or whatever comes from the NCACC? You see, because if you say, I just want to, you to help us, because you see, if you use the step that was laid out by the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence around the particular issue of information, how information peddlers are using different people to attain, I mean, or to get them to publicize certain developments. Now, I'm using that as my first point, that are you assured that I don't want to know about your source. You see, I'm saying that we'll come to that, how do we deal with that as Parliament? Because as Mr. Kronabad has said, it's correct. We'll never force you, you see. We'll never push you to give us the information that we don't have. I know where the Parliamentary Committee goes, and we can't go beyond that. But second to that, you know, because that's what we need to get guidance on, is, you know, it would be nice of members of Parliament to seem to forget the laws as they begin putting those laws together. So when we deal with the issue of privileges, Mr. Kronabad, what do we say to ourselves? You see, that do we say that we've got so much power that we can go in any institution and take any information out of that institution without the knowledge of the principals of that particular institution? Or to be able to say to ourselves that whoever runs those institutions or we've got the authority in those institutions, we could undermine them. Because from what I've heard is that the NCACC has not given this information out. And it's a worrying point. And it's something that I solicit guidance. And it's been very difficult within the rules of Parliament to know how to deal with that particular issue. So it's an issue that is open-minded. I want us to be open-minded about it. We aren't here to judge and prejudge the member himself. I mean, he's raised issues, as the members have pinpointed. But I also solicit to look at how does the rules of Parliament guide me to deal with these particular issues. So I'm saying that does members of Parliament, do we say to each other, we've got unfettered powers, I mean privileges, that we can go into any institution and take information? That is an unanswered question. I mean, you can attempt, but I know I've asked the legal representatives of Parliament to give me that particular, so that if I engage the member, I engage him on the basis of genuinity and understanding of what is the guidance provided by the institution itself. And I find the institution wandering around a particular development. So that's why I'm saying that from my side, there would never be a muzzling of the opposition, but more to find ways of how to build upon our own democracy, that how to make sure that where there are weaknesses within the system, we take it up. And it's within that context that we're encouraging this particular debate to take forward, so that we can understand, has the member breached any rules of Parliament? I must tell you upfront that within going into the system itself of Parliament, I haven't found it, and it's going to be very difficult for us to go into that route. But I'll leave members of the committee to say their views. But I'm raising my concern that there is information in the mindset of the organization that I belong to, which is I'm an honorable member of Parliament, and I have gone to that information to see how do you deal with this particular issue. Can any member of Parliament take any information and make use of it without the knowledge of the institution itself? That's my other thing. Now, the one part that I still want to bring to your attention, Mr. Mimir, and I want us to reflect on. I mean, you know, you also are guided by members of Parliament by the Constitution, and we have agreed that we are going to be upholding the Constitution. Yeah. Sorry? Huh? Okay. Now, I wanted us to look into the Constitution also. Now, I'll give you an opportunity, Mr. Ndamiyane, so that we reflect on this issue and see exactly where we are going. Because we want to learn from this and want to learn the hard way amongst ourselves. So I would really look for some guidance so that we don't just deal for the NCACC must come up. I'm not in team. The NCACC must come and you must get it. You know, I've always said that the NCACC must answer for itself. And I would never venture to want to enter into that field. That's why I've been always clear in my statement that I am not a member of the NCACC, and I'm not going to be standing here and defending the NCACC. Even in this particular platform, I wouldn't want us to enter into that frame for entertaining what the NCACC is doing until the NCACC comes here and presents its fact. And I know the minister has been answering questions over the media, but at the end of the day, in the parliamentary process, I expect him to come in front of you so that you could answer some of the things. That opportunity I couldn't be given by parliament. I will provide it when the correct opportunity arises. But I'm also saying that still outstanding question that keeps on my mind, the correctness of the information that we have to put in front of the NCACC, how correct is it? Has it not been generated by peddlers, or is it information that, because as I said, I won't force you to disclose your source, but give us an opportunity to know the correctness of the information that has to be presented in front of the NCACC. How correct it is? How could we provide as parliament? How can I assure members that this information just cannot come to effect from an anonymous person? So that person, if he does exist, or is not a peddler, that person is proposed. If the NCACC has not given you the information, who then are we talking about? That's where the question, I think, would arise. So that for me as a chairperson, what I take to the NCACC must have some certainty that it does derive from the NCACC, or is an information that is quite correct that we can make use of. If you could guide me on that one, I'd be very glad. But I'll give you, Mr. Hunabad, the opportunity, and I'll give Ms. Ndabeni after the try.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we've got two issues here. The one issue is the revealing of the information on the one hand, and the other issue is the whole issue about arms deals and everything. Now, let me put it in the first instance, as far as the first issue is concerned. It is true. I mean, parliamentary privilege is not unlimited. That is true. But if there was a contravention of any act or a law or whatever, then we must get legal experts to look into the matter. I don't know what the process was, what the Honourable Mr. Meynier followed, but I mean, I take myself as a member of parliament. If I get certain information, surely I have to look at certain legislation to see whether I'm going to contravene it or not. So I don't know whether he did it, but I suppose any party or any member of parliament to reveal certain information, firstly, see to it that they do not contravene certain legislation. If there's a dispute on the matter, whether legislation has been contravened or not, then we have to deal with that matter. So I will suggest, Chairperson, that, and you refer to legal advices from Parliament, and as far as I understand you correctly, that they didn't see any contravention as far as the parliamentary rules are concerned and all that sort of issues. If that is so, then there was no contravention. It's as simple as that. And it's the same, I would suggest that we then also look at certain legal advisors who can look into the act itself to see whether there was any contravention of that. And if they find that there was a contravention, let the member be informed about their view, and then they can use their legal advisors, and then we can get both copies on the issue on the table, and then as a committee we can make a decision. But I think if we're going to sit down here today to see whether there was a contravention of the act or not, I suppose some of us are legally qualified, but I don't think all of us, and we will debate the whole week. So I would suggest that is, as far as that is concerned, that the member has a fair and just chance to respond to other legal advisors who may have a different legal opinion, whether there was a contravention or not. So that is my suggestion as far as that is concerned. As far as the arms deal as such, Chairperson, you know, this committee, all over the years, had a problem with the NCACC. We always have a problem with reports. We always have to ask for reports. And you know that at one stage, there was a big problem. It actually disintegrated the NCACC. You will remember when Professor Carter Asmal was a member of that committee. At one stage, there was some progress, and then suddenly it just disintegrated. And Chairperson, being a part of the arms industry in South Africa for almost 10 years, I understand the sensitivity as far as arms deals are concerned and everything. I know that a client doesn't want the whole world to know what he bought from another country. I know that. But I think the principal problem with arms deals is when it's part of the human violations by certain countries. That is a problem. Because, and I will take an example. You know, at one stage, Turkey was declared a country which we will not do any arms deal because of certain human rights violations. And then suddenly it changed. So I would say that if we get the members of the NCACC here, to be honest with us as members of parliament, say, listen, we're going to make deals with these countries. Or here is a list of countries that we think we're not going to do any deals because of this or this and this. Then we as members of parliament, then we can play our watchdog role and say, but you said you're not going to do any deals with this country. Why did you do a deal with it? And then they can answer to it. So I think it's two ways we will have to handle this matter and to go. Thank you.
Honourable members, you remain. I'm very clear that these issues have been coming on for some time, how the state of the NCACC is. And that's why we have never hidden the information, even when members started to come into Parliament, that we provided that this is what is going on. But I'm just saying, that issue, we are going to go into it. It's our responsibility to tackle the NCACC. But as I said to you, I'm not sure. That's what we are looking for, that how did the member handle. As the member pinpoints to you that I have seen an ETV interview of the member, and that's when then I wrote a letter to him. And that's how he then let us know what he is talking about. You see, that's how the process has started, you see. Now, that's why I said to him also, read the full legislation on close and non-disclosure. So that he understands. It's just, I mean, I'm not dealing with a member in a manner that I want to penalize him, but I'm looking at the situation that it depends on the member himself, how he conducts himself and make us aware. Now, if he says he doesn't want to disclose his source, you see, I'm just saying that in the memories of Parliament, there are experiences, and we have expressed that particular view that we do have problems in peddlers. And it is there, you see. So we are solely reliant on the member, of how the member wants to guide us, of how to handle this situation. Dealing with the issue of unfettered power, as I'm saying, that's a difficult part that we also have to look into it as ourselves, that because we're also dealing with institutions. I mean, that we have, the NCACC is our own creation by law, and we have taken an oath. So all, and we've got a constitution. So we need some guidance. I'm not saying that we must deal with this issue as if I've got all the legal experts on my side. I'm saying there are weaknesses within the parliamentary rules, and I'm glad that there's one or two chief whips that are here to come and we're presenting it to them that we do have a problem here. That how do you deal with this particular matter? It's a matter of concern, because besides dealing with the NCACC, we have to deal with how to deal with information amongst ourselves here. Because I'll come back to what the Constitution says, but I will give you an opportunity to reflect on the matter, because I also look for guidance as a chair of the committee. I can't be reckless about how I deal, because I'm only given the mandate by Parliament of how to interact with its own members. And I'm saying that here is a member of Parliament having an information. Now it's difficult to know where does that information come from, and how do I process that information to be able to deal with the NCACC becomes an outstanding question that the member must, and all other members of Parliament must give guidance that how do we deal with it. If we can't find it, we'd have to put it in front of Parliament as an institution and write to the Speaker and say, this is what we think, and this is what is coming out, and give us guidance about how do we assist you to go on around this particular development. It has been very much important development that has taken place within our own democracy. That's why I don't want to undermine it. We're dealing with it as that is a development that we have never seen before of what happens when members are confronted with this particular issue. Can I give you an opportunity?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do believe that the source of the information is almost irrelevant. I think what is relevant to us as a portfolio committee on defense and military veterans is that the law has been violated by the NCACC in two ways. First of all, it is almost from the inception of the Act, the NCACC has been delinquent in submitting the reports to Parliament and to the public, which the law lays down that it should do. We've all heard that. We've all confirmed that. The second thing is the NCACC has sold arms to countries against our own laws. Now, this was first alleged by my colleague and has been confirmed by Minister Khadebe. In fact, if you take the example of Libya, and I read from the minister's statement at his news conference last week, Libya has purchased various weapons of all kinds from South Africa, and these include multiple grenade launchers. In fact, as a matter of interest, he went further and disclosed that South Africa had sold some of its C-130 aircraft to Libya. Now, I mean, that is a problem area all on its own. As far as I'm aware, we had 9 of these aircraft, and we were told by the military that they need billions for a new airlift capability. And at the same time, we're selling what parts of our little airlift capabilities to Libya. So the very sale of arms to Libya is in contravention of Section 15 of the Conventional Arms Control Act. So therefore, we have two areas where the NCACC has been delinquent, one on reporting, two on who it's sold to. I think we must realize that there is a matter of urgency that we have to address this to stop it happening. And as my colleague has pointed out, there are deals pending to Zimbabwe specifically that we should act with speed to halt.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I indicated earlier on, after my question, I have a follow-up. I'm still making that follow-up. As the Honourable Member from that side has agreed and recognized, really we do have the privilege as Members of Parliament, but there are some limitations, as it was put. I understand the Honourable Member does not want to disclose the source of the information, which concerns me, although I respect that. What concerns me is whether these are actual facts or are just claimed facts. But for me to go to that side, we'll have to take another option. Secondly, I just want to get from the Honourable Member, is he aware that if he did not get this information in that document from the NCACC, which according to my limited understanding is the only body with the authority to release such information, then his source has done that illegally? That's the first question that I want to pose. After that, as a committee member sitting here and a member of parliament, I know I'm privileged to some information, but there are systems. As the Honorable Mlangen has indicated, if I were to happen to get that information, the first process or step that I would have taken is to approach the committee so that I raise this thing within parliament, because I signed an oath, and then I cannot be part of the people who can or who want to raise panic amongst our forces publicly and in defense by going to the media saying all those things without verification. I stop there, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I must say, I had thought that if we had facts on the table, it would help us. But it seems that one man's fact is another man's fiction. So we'll have to wade through the waters of facts and fiction. I think there are two things here, Honorable Chair. The source of information and the validity of information. And this should be separated. It seems that we are obsessed with the source of information. I had thought that we would look at the validity of the information. That would help us. I must say I'm concerned, too, that South Africa sells weapons to anyone, any country that has got money, and including Zionist Israel. And I don't see Zionist Israel here. Maybe they haven't purchased. But now, as for the countries that I mentioned here, if it's true, it's just that we don't know the facts. I think it was a good sale. Iran is under the onslaught of imperialism. They need weapons to defend the revolution. Libya is under the onslaught of imperialism. They need weapons to defend a revolution. Not only that, even to support revolutionary forces around the country. And so is Syria, so is Venezuela. And if, with Venezuela, I'm even surprised that it is classified as a rogue state, because the president there won a popular support. So is Zimbabwe too. We mustn't forget that there are some people even in this country who are calling for the regime change in Zimbabwe. And how do regimes defend themselves? Through the force of arms. And I think the comrades in Zimbabwe too should be armed to the teeth. And so it's Northern Korea. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I really, given what Ndate Diale said and Ndate Mlangeni said, these are our elders in this country. Ndate Diale said we are not enemies, and Ndate Mlangeni said the same thing, that something similar. But the point I'm making is appropriate to what has been said, that the member is raising these issues of human rights, and we get worried because, look, human rights get violated on a daily basis, and we don't hear DA like standing up strongly so that it can convince us that it is a big watchdog of human rights. I mean, for example, in Iraq, when the powers that be, America and Britain, attacked Iraq, United Nations has said, no, don't use force. We think we can deal with the issue of Saddam by negotiation and avoid all the suffering that will take place if you use force. And America and Britain, those are big powers. You know, as you talk about them, your heart starts beating because they are the bully boys of the world. I mean, they attacked, and after attacking, today there's a lot of suffering there. People are suffering, women are suffering, children are suffering, and people of Iraq are still fighting each other. And this is what United Nations had wanted to avoid. But you didn't hear DA talking about you big bosses, why are you against United Nations? Why are you acting against the will of United? All the nations of the world come to an agreement and the big ones decide to do otherwise, and DA is quiet. Now, I'm mentioning that because we're questioning this thing about DA being concerned about human rights. You can't be concerned about human rights just here at home. We're living in a global village. Especially the big powers, those should be exemplary about human rights. And when they violate even decisions of United Nations and you don't come out as strong as you come out now, we're just surprised with this conviction that you have to human rights. And that is why up to today we're still waiting for real facts, because really we cannot trust you with human rights. You don't have a big history of these people who are really concerned. Human rights were violated in this country for a very long time. But, you know, I just wanted to mention that we wish opposition could be the type of opposition that builds. You know, in Africa, guys like Nyerere always saying there's one party system, because opposition is the type of opposition that hates you because they are the former colonial powers. Now they are in they are not in like opposition in Europe and America, which will want to build. Though they oppose and criticize, but the basic spirit is to build a nation. The opposition that is here in Africa is the type of opposition that want to destroy. They hate you. Why did the ANC take over? And if we can, we want it to fall. So I'm just saying, I wish we could develop in this country where we reach those levels of wanting to build each other rather than destroy each other. Because if that was the case, you'd have taken the option that Ntate Mlangeni mentioned. You'd have gone to minister. You realize if you are really doing this, this is wrong. Try and do an in-house correction rather than jump into the press. If you run to the press, then you say, I've got them, and I want to tarnish or destroy them as an organization. So the basic point is that we wish we could be really reconciling like we used to try to do so, and build a nation in this country rather than want to destroy each other. Thanks, Chair.
Again, Chair, there have been, again, a great deal of comment and very few questions. But the one question that has come up is about the validity or the facts of the information which I disclosed. The minister called a press conference on the 6th of August, and he did not deny the allegations. And that is my response to that question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
I'm not going to comment on Member Kakana's rather interesting view on human rights, but I did note that his criticism of the government of Iraq, which emerged after Britain and America intervened. And I see from South Africa's report to the United Nations on arms sales that in 2007 we actually sold 30 armored vehicles to Iraq. Thought he might be interested to know that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one good thing is that the arms industry is going to flourish in South Africa after this debate, if I listen to all the opinions and everything. Chairperson, I mean, every member has got his or her own opinion on certain matters, and so I want to emphasize again that we get legal reports whether there was any contravention or not. And I want to say that I think a couple of members have also referred to the oath as far as the Constitution is concerned. And I think we had a good example today that some members think that certain countries does not violate human rights. Others think they do. And what does the oath in core say is that you have to be loyal towards South Africa, and we will serve South Africa to the best interest. But that is as far as the opinion of every member is concerned. I don't know what the Honourable Member's view was, but from an objective point of view, I can say that he thought that he's acting in the best interest of South Africa, because he thinks that certain countries are violating human rights, and why do we sell arms to them? That's an opinion, you understand? And that's why I say, that's why we have certain rules we have to comply to. And that's the crux of the matter, is that we must get that legal opinion, and then we must get the NCACC here to verify which are facts and which are fiction, if I use those words. And I mean, if the DA member used the fiction, then he's going to have egg on his face and his party. But if the minister is wrong, he's going to have egg on his face, and he's actually then a problem as far as his work is concerned. So let's get those facts first. Then we can further continue on this debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Honourable Member did not respond to my question of the illegality of the obtainment of the information or the document that it contains. I asked, do you realise, then if you did not get that document from the NCACC, that means that you got the information illegally, or your source did so. Thank you.
And I'll give a round to members to respond to the fact that what Mr. Kronobalt is putting in front of us, that let's solicit some legal opinion about this. Because you see, with due respect to what Mr. Memir is saying, that he is more responding to the minister. Now, I don't know which law says we should just Mr. Memir, you need to take us a little bit serious. There is law. We are saying to you that in the national contravention, in the national convention legislation, there is a process outline of how do we obtain information. And that's what I'm trying to get you to understand, that it is there. Now, what Mr. Kronobalt is saying, that did you read that or not, without the minister responding to your statement, I look for guidance for the committee. But if the matter is like, I must go to the and look for the statement of the minister, I'm not sure that I can run the committee in that particular way. I need to know that did you understand what has been presented to the is law, and we all have to uphold that particular law, you see. And that's what I'm trying to get from you. Did you read the legislation? Did you understand the legislation, what it meant? Besides addressing the crisis of the NCCC, because if you read that at 2324, it does give us guidance as members of parliament of how to handle the particular matter. So I'm trying to get some understanding from you to that. But the way you respond is, no, the minister has confirmed your statement. Now, I'm saying that is a debate between yourself and the minister. That has not come to. This committee is only now sitting to begin addressing the issue itself. And we can't be sitting through the media. We are going to call the minister next, and we'll be asking the same questions to the minister, that how is the state of the NCCC, and address the NCCC through that particular one. But I'm more concerned that how do you handle issues of this nature within the parliamentary precincts. And that's what I'm looking for, not what the minister is saying. So I would really want you to help me.
Chairperson, let me once again say, that it should be the NCACC in the dock explaining their contraventions of the law, not me. But once again, I would respond by saying I'm not prepared to discuss the sources of my information or anything related to the sources of my information.
So I'm thinking that you're saying that to Parliament, that to this parliamentary committee, that you are not prepared to disclose the source. I'm just asking for
that. That is correct.
You see, as I said, that there is a precedent set in Parliament, and we need to be assured, you see, because the member is expecting me to call a portfolio committee meeting to get the minister to come on the basis of what he has presented to Parliament. Now, if I don't know the source of that information and the correctness of it, and then with the member not even saying to me that he has followed the procedures of Parliament, which are lined out and written up in the legislation that governs the National Convention, I have a problem. All I want to know is that how do you take that information from here now? Do I take that information based on what you are saying to each other in the media and call the NCCC? Or how do I take this information that they're providing to us? That's the point I'm left, that I need to be able to. Now, also, I would like members to respond to what Mr. Kronobalt is suggesting to the committee, to say that let's have a legal channel and a legal opinion provided to the committee to see how do we handle this thing. Because we all agree that no member got unfettered powers. We are governed by the Constitution. We are governed by the laws of this country. And we need to defend them. And the NCCC happens to be one of our own creations. How do we handle that matter itself? So Mr. Kronobalt says, let's go ahead and look for some opinion, because we have to be advised by Parliament how to handle the matter itself. Because you see, I have to say to Parliament, I have to say to the Speaker, there is no basis, there is no source of the information. So I'm caught in a trap that should I call the Mr. Minister is going to say to me, I don't know who gave you that information. And what do I do?
Mr. Chairman, the point I've been trying to make is that the minister himself is a source of the information. He has confirmed arms sales to Libya. He has confirmed arms sales to Syria. Those are in violation of 5 of the 11 provisions of Section 15 of the Act.
Can I correct you? You know what I'm correcting you about? He didn't do a presentation to Parliament. He did the presentation to the media. I'm talking of a member of Parliament who did the presentation to us. Does that mean you're interested? So if you are directing me to go about looking for newspaper cuttings, I'll do that. But I can't present that as parliamentary report. That's why I asked the member to present it here. And I'm asking an authority direction from him that where does the information, he says he's not giving us the information. So I'm saying, the minister has responded fairly later. The first person who gave us the information about this is still the member himself. So as I'm
but the minister has confirmed. So can I suggest we get the minister here to confirm the information he's given to the media?
I think, in my opinion, I've said we're not enemies, but it appears that we're enemies. For instance, before you allow a member to speak, he interjects you. What is that? Is that a member of the parliament or a member of the committee? I don't think. Okay. Honourable Chair, our member stood by his information that he will never reveal. Reveal the source. Now it's a difficult question. How to take it up to the minister? Again, because we are confronted by this situation. I agree with the Honorable Colonel. I agree with the Honorable Colonel that legal experts should be. But because, yes, I agree. Now, I want to say, furthermore, to say that we also as a committee should call NCC. Call NCC to come to our committee to explain this allegation. We regard them as an allegation because we don't know where the source comes from. So come and explain. Perhaps we are not the members of NCC. NCC should come here. At the same time, of course, Honorable Cornwall, as he said, is proper for legal experts also. I accept that. And Honorable Chair, we cannot sit here for the whole day repeating. The member made it quite clear that we will never reveal the source. Why we are sitting here for the whole day? Well, some other things to do.
Yes.
I think you should think of closing the meeting somewhere.
No, we are going towards that.
Thank you.
With the other. Just be patient. You see, because I know you are not law. You are not expert in law. But I do need your opinion that how do we handle the matter. Because it's important for us to know what we are talking about, you see, and how we would want this issue to be tackled, even by Parliament as an institution. I take the suggestion that has been made by Mr. Khrunavar that we will look around for legal experts. I know Mr. Banara is a legal expert in Parliament, but we'll continue to do that. I take the fact that the member says he won't disclose his source of information. Now, I must say it does present some difficulties around this particular area. And we have to deal with that one. I just want to subject those two issues before I close the meeting. That what do we do now from here? I'll give you Mr. Mimir, I'll give Mr. Kekana, I'll give... Okay, and I'll give Mr. Ndabe. Mr. Ndabe, Mr. Mimir, you go.
Chair, there's a third and more important issue that this committee needs to consider, and that is
that the minister at his press conference on the 6th of August 2009 confirmed that the NCACC were considering authorizing the export of thousands of sniper rifles to Syria and millions of rounds of ammunition to Zimbabwe. That is a very serious situation. And my question to you and to other members of the committee, what are we going to do about it? The NCACC could meet at any time this week and authorize those arms deals. Yes.
Would you give me the source of that information?
Chair, as I said, the source of that information was Mr. Jeff Radebe, who confirmed on the 6th of August 2009 at the Union Buildings, yes, that the committee were considering the deal with Syria and the deal with Zimbabwe.
No, Chair, I still maintain, I mean, look, if you're going to sit in Parliament, our basis for arguing parliamentary matters is the media. Look, media is civil society, is fine, but let's accept at times, in many instances I've said before, a person said, no, I was misquoted, I was distorted, that's not exactly what I said. So I'm not necessarily saying that is not correct, but I'm saying it might be true, it might not be true, but I don't think really we can act as parliament based on media. Media has its, it informs, but also remember itself, newspapers and at times information is not accurate there. So the route that I think we should take is that they should be here and tell us what the situation is, and once they are here, you know, we're talking like people who are aliens who can come to Parliament. These are members of Parliament. And if we want them, they should come to Parliament and talk to us. But for us to be honest, to take decisions based on sources like the media, which can be accurate or inaccurate, I don't think that is proper. So I would still persist that let's wait until the minister comes to Parliament, to Portfolio Committee, and then we can take matters forward.
I just want to emphasize that I said that the legal opinion must be given to the Honourable Member as well, that I can respond to that, that if we meet them on the issue, that we don't say, okay, you're going to see what you're going to get from your legal advice and that sort of thing, that we have both in our hands, and then we can have a constructive debate. And I just want to say to my colleague here on my right, he referred to aliens and colonialism and that. Firstly, I want to tell him I believe in aliens. I do think they exist. Secondly, I want to say to the Honourable Member, I am a member, as if I can quote his president, Jacob Zuma, I'm a member of the white tribe and the only white tribe of Africa. Thank you.
No, Master, I must assure you again that Mr. Maymir is a member of our committee. And the work we do it with him. And he knows we do consult each other, so now and then. And even some of the report crafting, we do make use of his skills. So we'll always, that's why the matter is in front of us as members of Parliament on the Portfolio Committee. Whatever weaknesses are there, we'll be addressing them as a team of people.
No, I agree with comrades who are saying it's about time, perhaps, that we bring this to a close, because we are just merely repeating ourselves now. One of the members here says, and he repeats this, that any time NCACC might take a decision to sell some arms either to Zimbabwe or Syria. So it's perhaps been sometime this week. I am not sure as I'm sitting here now whether we are not allowed to sell anything to those two countries. We need to be clarified on these matters before we can take definite decisions and say, South Africa, you have contravened a law which forbids you from selling arms to country A, B, and C, and so on and so forth. We don't have that information. And we are discussing, these are hypothetical questions, things which may not be there. And I find it difficult, Community Chairperson. The only thing, perhaps, that can try to bring us near to a conclusion is if we agree that we should immediately call NCACC to come and account, come and answer these questions, or the minister himself. Not what we see in the press. Please, come on, Lenchaps. Don't tell us what the press is saying. The minister has admitted this in the press, that this and that and that. If he turns around and says it was misquoted, what are we going to say? What are we going to say? I'm misquoted, I didn't say that. And the thing dies off. We don't want such things to happen. Let the minister come here and explain. Khadebe. Or the committee. Let them come and answer this question, these allegations made here, Committee Chair. They must come. You must force them to come. I rest my case.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. On the hypothetical question, what if South Africa sells weapons to Syria and Zimbabwe this week? I think this committee should unanimously say, yes, they must sell them. Because they are defending the revolution. And, of course, the Zimbabwean question must be seen in its proper historical context. It is not about human rights, it is about land rights. The same people today who are the apostles of human rights, in the early 1980s, when over 30,000 people died in Matabele land, actually they even used to muzzle editors and journalists not to report about it. Because then Robert Mugabe was their best friend and they had laundry interest there. I remember even the editor of Observer was summoned by Tiny Rollins to withdraw his story on the massacres in Matabele land. Because they said that was going to endanger their interest, economic interest in Zimbabwe. And around that time, Robert Mugabe got strings of degrees in the Western countries. But it is only when he addressed the land question that the land must come to its indigenous rightful owners that today they are talking about human rights. Now, I think the Zimbabweans deserve armories so that they can defend the revolution. And the sooner they get weapons, the better.
No, I'm sure. On a lighter note, this are really calling us to start debating amongst ourselves. Can I have you, Ms. Ndabeni? No, Ms. Ndabeni, we're still on.
Thank you, Sir President. Whilst I fully support the previous speaker on what he has said, and further ensuring this House that we have nothing to be worried about if South Africa is traded with those countries, because anyway they are not on the UN embargo list, so we couldn't have contravened any law or act. They are not signatories to that. But as I continuously ask that question on the legality of the obtainment of the information, I want to ask this committee, realizing how serious and sensitive are the issues that we discuss here, the information that we get from the sectors that we are working with, and thirdly, taking that to the public. I honestly, sincerely think that is very wrong for any public representative to do without following the systems that we are talking about in Parliament. Then this puts me in an awkward situation. How do I then trust the members that are seated here that they are not continuously going to do what they've done. Example, what has been done by the Honorable Member. Going to sectors and getting this information illegally as public representatives, because they have a privilege. But we don't know Ukuti. From where the Honorable Member got the document, where did it go to? We are going to 2010. We don't need any more enemies around the country. And we don't want the whole world to panic because we are a leaking state. Every country concerned with our business in South Africa would be tempted not to do any business with South Africa because we are a leaking state. I don't want to know who the source is, but I insist that how the document was obtained was illegal. And by virtue of me believing that, I call for the withdrawal of the Honorable Member from this committee. I make a recommendation. I ask this committee to support me in that, that we forward a recommendation to the Office of the Speaker so that they can get the legal advices and everything that they are talking about. The Parliament must take its own processes. I thank you, Chairperson.
I don't have quite clarity on what the Honourable Member just proposed. Does she want to ask the Speaker to remove the Honourable Member from this committee? Then I won't support it, Chairperson, as simple as that, because I said let's get the legal opinions. I mean, if there was no contravention of any parliamentary rule, and I said it right in the beginning, then we have no justification to remove the Honourable Member from this committee. And you see, I agree with the other members that we should close the meeting, get the NCCA and the minister here, that they can respond, that we get the correct facts, and then we can go further and get the legal opinions, so then we can deal with the matter. But just to make a submission here and to say that there's a proposal to remove the Honourable Member, I will not support that. Because the member, from his point of view, and I can just remind the Honourable Member, there's also legislation on the protecting of whistleblowers in this country. You know, sometimes we're very fond to say that we've got the most liberal constitution in the world. So let's comply to that. There's such thing as freedom of speech, the media is playing an important role of that, and all that sort of things. So let's respect that as well. Let's get the balance in this matter. And yes, there are certain issues that should be confidential. Like, and I can give you an example. Let's take the combat readiness of the SANDF. I'm a supporter to say that that should be a closed meeting because I don't want the whole world to know that we are incompetent. You understand? So what I say is, then the committee can decide on a specific matter to say we go into committee. It's a closed meeting. It's not open for the media. It happened before. It's like the JSCI. I mean, the JSCI, the Joint Standing Committee on Select Committee on Intelligence, they have a closed meeting all the time. So if there's an important matter, then we can deal it. There are procedures how to deal with such matters. And therefore, I will not support that. I think the other members also support it, that we get the minister here, let him answer, let me get the real facts, let's get a legal opinion, and then we can go forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, the balance I'm trying to get to. The member has raised her own concerns about the fact that she was looking for who gave the information and she has not got the answer. Now she's putting her own proposal.
She's never going to
do. That's the point. Maybe that's what she can say. This committee should not vote. On top of what you're saying, it's own legality, but the committee then have to listen to what she's saying, that there should be. She is calling for the withdrawal of the member from this particular committee, and that issue to be addressed by the Speaker itself. And I know that any member of Parliament will still, even as the whip, will also have a chance to guide us on this particular matter in different levels of Parliament. I must say to you that that precedent is never here in Parliament. It has never said that how do you remove a member from a committee. So I don't have a view of how to handle that matter. I would have to rely on the strength of Parliament or the speaker himself to give guidance on a particular issue. But it is here now. You are here, Mr. I can listen to you, sir. I wanted to give you an you are one of the best people that I can't undermine. I'll really give you an opportunity to talk.
I really appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. I'm not a member of this committee, but thanks for the opportunity to speak. This debate has suddenly taken a slightly different course with the Honourable Member for the ANC proposing Mr. Mania should withdraw from the committee or be withdrawn. But let me just say, Mr. Chairman, that there have always been leaks to political parties. There will always be leaks to political parties. One day when the ANC is in the opposition benches, people will be leaking information to them, and they will be using information in exactly the same way as Mr. Mania has used this information. This is the nature of politics. This is the nature of politics. It happens in every single country throughout the world. What has happened here is not different. But I think, Mr. Chairman, that Mr. Groenewald has, in fact, hit the nail on the head. And as a Democratic Alliance, I want this committee to know that we would welcome some legal advice on this matter. I am hearing that Mr. Mania has stolen information, that the information has been stolen. I'm hearing a whole lot of allegations. Now we're hearing that he should be withdrawn. But Mr. Groenewald is right. It is only when we do have the legal advice and we would have the opportunity to respond to it that we can really start to get to the bottom as to whether anything legal or illegal has been done. So we would actually welcome that, Mr. Chairman. I want you to know that. But secondly, Mr. Chairman, it's not the source that is the important issue here. It is, in fact, the truth of the source. And for me, the only real way of discovering whether there is truth in the allegations or not is to call the NCACC here, hopefully the minister as well as Mr. Mania has indicated, to question them and to discover the validity or otherwise of that information. And I will say to you that if Mr. Mania has got the wrong end of the stick, we as a political party, as Mr. Groenewald has already said, would have to say, I think it was Mr. Groenewald, I'm not sure, we would have egg on our face. But, and that is something that we will have to live with. But this is a critical issue, sir. It really is a critical issue. And two things have got to happen. I think the legal advice is important. And secondly, the NCACC has got to be called to verify or otherwise the facts. Thanks for letting me speak.
You know, you are a veteran in Parliament, so I do listen. I do take the advice that you have put forward. And as I said, we are working hard on getting the NCACC to come to Parliament. But we have thought that it's important that the minister be the main presenter of the information so that you get it from the executive more than to the officials, because you might end up with a situation that officials themselves in their nature might have been exchanging information, which gets us into this type of problem. But it's something that we are working on. As I said, you were supposed to have been here on the 19th. But he has then asked us to give him up to the second. So we don't undermine the seriousness of the situation that we're getting confronted with. We are going to deal with it, and we're not going to leave it where it is. I do take the point that he is making, and what he is also saying, that I have to go and do a presentation to the speaker himself, so that the speaker can advise and use all the legal system to assist all of us. And when that opinion is available, I'll definitely make you aware, as the whip was on at our meeting today, to know exactly what is the opinion coming from the speaker himself and what are they saying about the issues that they're confronting us before we even put it in front of the committee itself, so that we could talk about it and see how to handle such an issue. Yes. You wanted to say something, sir, to Ms. Utiye?
No, I'm covered, sir.
We are covered. Okay.
So, no use for it, sir.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No, I'm very glad when you're
talking. No, I understand.
I'm very glad. I'm very glad.
You're with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm covered. Thank you.
Honorable members, I will take each and every opinion that has been made by you, and we will then place it in front of the speaker to look for some guidance of what do we do in relation to the issue itself. And we'll then come back and conclude on the matter itself in the manner that would have been guided by the institution itself. We must say that we do take it very serious. You see, I accept what you are saying, that there are leakages taking place. But, you know, having a leaking stage is also a problem. And that's what we are trying to get into grasping, that how do we deal with this particular issue. it might not only be Mr. Mainir's problem, but it might be a lot of people. That's why you see also coming from what the DSO has got confronted with in the past. We needed to continue that reflecting that what does that experience say to the institution and when you handle these issues. There's one outstanding issue I'm just going to raise it. I want you to reflect on it. You see, Parliament, in terms of the national security, in terms of the constitution, that issue arises. If you look at clause 198D, it does say that, let me read it out. National security is subject to the authority of Parliament and the national executive. Now, that is a very much important issue. Because, as you know, that as a chairperson, I need to be guided by law, and I need to be guided by the Constitution. And that issue is outstanding. Parliament doesn't have a guidance on that particular development. As a committee of this nature that deals with this type of issues, I would add that particular question to Parliament and to the Speaker to give us guidance around this particular issue. Because I don't want members to be found wondering or pondering and be accused tomorrow. I want members to be given an opportunity to express their point of views, but within the precincts of the law, so that tomorrow, whatever we do, we don't model ourselves as public representatives who seems not to understand the law and the Constitution itself. And I would say that's on those bases that I would present that question to them, to say, give us guidance, because this is quite clear in my mind with the type of members that we have, that these questions are continuously going to arise. And I don't want to suppress members here. I want members to have a right to express their own point of views. But in that robustness, I just want us to be guided by the law and the Constitution. And we don't do things outside that. So that tomorrow, whatever views you have, you express them, but within the ambit of the law. So I would just say to members, in conclusion, I will add up that particular view, and then out of guidance, I will entertain changes with the members of the committee, so that it could all help us. So tomorrow and tomorrow, nobody points a finger at each other. There is a point of departure that we understand how the law functions. But can I thank you all members for your contributions and what you have said. And thank you for honoring the meeting. Thank you, members. Meeting is concluded.